Im Tamigod Beinyan, and if you'll delve further into the matter, Tira, you'll see, Kiolam Nivra L'Shimush Odom, that the world has been created for man's use. Amnam, however, Hinehi Omei Bishikul Gadol, man remains in a great balance. Kima Adam Nimshach Ha'achar Olam, because if man is pulled after the world, Umisrachik Miborom, becomes distant from his Creator, Hinehu Miskalkel, Umakalkel Olam Imo, he becomes ruined and ruins the world with him. Vimusholi Batzmo, if man rules over himself, Vinidabik Miboro, and clings to his Creator, Umishtamish Mina Olam, and he uses the world, Raklios Olosiyua, just to be an aid, Lavod Boro, to serve his Creator, Humisale, he becomes elevated, Volam Atzmo, and the world itself, Misale Imo, the world itself becomes elevated along with him. A recent advertisement had a provocative statement. Hitler killed 6 million. Frank Perdue kills 6 billion. Point being, Adolf Hitler was a horrible, unimaginable menace to society. He actually killed 6 million people. But Frank Perdue is as worse, maybe even far worse. Why? Because he didn't kill 6 million. It's 6 billion broilers that he kills. And it's an ongoing, regular basis that he operates these slaughterhouses, destroying life. Now, how do you deal with that comparison? How do you rationally, intelligently discuss these ideas when people put forth an equality between human life and animal life? And let's keep in mind, it's not just every once in a while, and it's not a small segment of society. It's a rather vocal group. And they're very, very outspoken about their words. PETA, People for Ethical Treatment of Animals. And I'd like to share with you, they have many representatives and many people who buy into their thought process. Richard Dawkins, who's one of the fathers of modern evolution, has a number of points that he makes. He says, we all accept racism as evil. But why is racism any different than speciesism? For instance, before killing the human being, even if he's a heinous killer himself, we have all kinds of ethical debates. Capital crimes are discussed in all types of different forums, yet we'll willingly kill a cow without thinking about it. In fact, the only crime that's worse than killing is cannibalism. If you were to see a human being kill and eat another human being, you'd be aghast. Yet regularly we do that to other species all the time. Asks Richard Dawkins, what is the difference between racism and speciesism? And if you'd like to know how far this question goes, let me share with you an interesting quote. Ingrid Newkirk, president of PETA, was once being radio interviewed. And the interviewer was beginning to press her a bit about how strong her positions really are. And it's becoming clear that animals and human beings are about equal, and maybe really animals have more rights, and really animals are better than man. At a certain point, the interviewer said to her, tell me, imagine that you're on the highway, and in front of you, there's a human baby or a snake. Now you can't veer off to the left or the right. You have to make a choice. It's either the baby or the snake. You're going to have to kill one. Which one would you choose? She looks at the interview and says, there are some questions that I'd rather not answer. That is rather astonishing. And that is rather an impressive extent of how far the thought process goes. But after all said and done, what's the answer? What's the teret to such folly, to such foolishness? What's the answer to this question? And I'd like to share with you what I believe is the Das Torah perspective on this. And to do that, let's focus on a medrash that explains to us a very interesting conversation. One Erev Shabbos, Hillel was leaving the Beis Medrash. And his Talmidim, who learned from his every action, his every motion, asked him, Rebbe, where are you going? So he said, I'm going to do a chesed to myself. What is this chesed to yourself that you're going to do? He says, I'm now going to act in a manner properly, in a manner that's appropriate. I'm going to do a mitzvah. What's this mitzvah? He explained, I'm going to the bathhouse. V'chuzi mitzvah, this is a mitzvah. Says Hillel, of course it's a mitzvah. But listen to his answer. Look at the Roman guards. They're paid all kinds of money. They have specific people whose job it is only to wash the statue. The Romans assign a specific person to each statue. His job is to clean the statue. His job is to make it look beautiful. I was created in the Tzelem of Hashem. I'm created in the image of Hashem. Isn't it a mitzvah to keep this statue up proper? And with those words, he left. Now, I'd like to ask two penetrating questions on this medrash. Number one, Hashem has no guf. One of the basic tenets of our entire understanding of Hashem is Hashem is beyond all limitations. Hashem has no corporeal manifestation, no limits, no bounds. Hashem is beyond a guf. So when Hillel says that this body is a statue of Hashem, l'chora, it would seem that he's limiting God in a tremendous, tremendous way. But far worse than that, the greatness of the human is not his body. The greatness of the human is the neshama, the I who speaks, the I who thinks, the I who does what I'm supposed to in life. But Hillel was saying that the body, this physical part, is the statue of the king. This body was created in the image of God, just like the Romans washed their statues and they're paid for it, so do I have to wash this statue? That's not the greatness of man. When we say Tzelem Elokim, we don't refer to the body. So the question is, what did Hillel mean here, and what is he saying? And to understand the answer to this medrash, I think we have to understand what it is that Hashem created when he created Adam. And let's begin with a conversation before Hashem created man. Hashem calls together the Malachi Asharis and says to them, I would like to consider creating a man. I want your opinion. Malachi Asharis asks, what is this Adam? Matibo Shaluba, what is the nature of this man that you're to create? Says Hashem, his wisdom is far greater than yours. At a certain point, Hashem says, we're going to do it. Hashem creates this Adam, and then Hashem says to the Malachim, and let me show you. Let me demonstrate to you the astonishing wisdom of man. And then Hashem calls forth man. And Hashem asks man to name each of the species. Now, in our language, there's a convention and custom to use certain words as labels for certain objects. A cup is a cup. A chair is a chair. A table is a table. There's no direct correlation between the word table and that object with four legs on it, other than convention and custom. That's the way people refer to it. It became accepted. That's the way it's called. But what Adam was asked to do was to name each species. Hashem brought forth the gamal, the sus, the chamor, and Hashem said, give me the name that's representative of the essence. And the Medrash explains to us that what Adam HaRishon did was define the essence nature, the very fabric, the very type of nefesh abahami, as well as the entire animal, with one word. One word that defined the essence of what it is. This is a shor, not just an ox in some convention manner, but an ox in the sense that this shor is the essence that defines it. That word demonstrated such wisdom because he peered into the essence of that animal, defined it in but one fell swoop, and when the Malachim saw that, they immediately agreed. His wisdom far surpassed that of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. But then there's another stage that the Medrash explains to us. The Medrash says that when Hashem created Adam, he was gigantic. He was brilliant. He was magnificent in a sense that's hard to imagine. He towered over everything else in creation. And as a matter of fact, when he was created, the Malachi Asharis Bikshu Lo Mashira, they wanted to sing Shira to Adam. You see, no matter how great a Malach is, a Malach only sees a part of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Hashem is limitless and boundless, and the most that even an angel can see is but a portion of Hashem. And the brilliance that the Malachim saw when they saw Adam was such that Bikshu Lo Mashira, they wanted to say Kadosh, Kadosh, they mistook him for HaKadosh Baruch Hu. At which point Hashem put Tardema, put sleep a man, and when he fell asleep, sound asleep, almost dead, they understood that this was not HaKadosh Baruch Hu. But you see, this is the point. When Hashem created Adam, it was for a vastly different purpose than we normally understand. And Hashem created Adam with far greater capacity. Man was the reason for creation. Man towered over all of creation. And even till today, every animal in creation by its very nature should fear man. A grizzly bear, a fully grown adult male grizzly bear, is a powerhouse. He can weigh up to 1,800 pounds. He'll eat up to 35 pounds of food a day, and he'll eat everything in sight. He can run faster than a horse for short distances, and with one swipe of his paw, he can kill a bison. Yet when a grizzly bear sees a man, he runs. Unless he's been trained otherwise, he has a natural fear of man. Why is that? Because man is the reason for creation. Man in his pristine state towered all over creation, and every animal in creation recognized the greatness of man. When man sinned, he changed things radically, and now animals no longer have the same respect as they should have. But even to today, there's still a awe, there's still a sense of fear. But back then, when Hashem first created man, every animal in creation bowed down in subservience to man, because every animal in creation understood that he was the reason for creation. The Medrash explains to us that the reason why Adam was created last is not because he's least important, quite the opposite. When you invite a guest, first you cook the foods, you prepare the dishes, you lay out the banquet table, and when everything is ready, then you invite in the guest. Hashem created the entire world for man. Everything in existence exists for man. Everything that was brought forth is to serve man. Man is the center of creation. Man is the reason of creation. When animal activists put man and animal on the same par, they're fundamentally misunderstanding the reason for creation. Everything that exists, the shor, the chamor, the ox, the cow, the chicken broiler, were created for man's use. And when man uses that, it in itself is now fulfilling its purpose in creation. When man makes kiddush on a cup of wine, he's being makdish, he's making holy that wine. When man eats a chicken so that he should better serve his creator, that chicken is serving its purpose in creation. It is becoming holy, it is fulfilling its purpose. And not only isn't it correct to somehow imagine that man and animal are comparable, it's so the opposite. Everything in creation exists for man. Everything in creation was only brought forth for man to use. And when man uses it, it fulfills its purpose in creation. And if man doesn't use it, it's wasted. If you bring forth a magnificent item, you carefully create it, but it's unused, it's gone to waste. If man doesn't use this world, if man doesn't actively take it and use it for its intended purpose, then any part that he doesn't use is effectively wasted, never reached its fulfillment, never reached its purpose in creation. And that's the answer to our animal activist friends. But what's the answer to Hillel? And to answer that, I think we need one more step. And that's to understand a basic relationship between man and HaKadosh Baruch Hu. There is something called a replica. A replica is something that carries a sort of memory, a sort of reference to the original. For instance, if you take your kids to the Empire State Building and you ride the elevator to the 86th floor, you'll find a little gift shop. And in the gift shop, you could buy a little replica, little model of the Empire State Building. You certainly don't ride the elevator in that little model. It's a tiny little replica, but it sort of like reminds you, it sort of somehow conjures up an image of it in your mind. An F-15 fighter. You ever seen a little plane, right? A little model plane. That's a replica of a full fighter plane. You can't bomb cities with your little model plane, but it somehow conjures up in your mind a reference to that original. That is a replica. A level above that is something called a representative. A representative is someone who reflects and represents the institution that sent him. So for instance, an ambassador is a representative of a government. Now with that, there's more recognition. With that, there's some of the honor of the one sending him. For instance, in the good old days of Imperial England, there was an expression that if you spit on a British sergeant, it's like you're spitting on the Queen herself. Why? Because that man is a representative of the Queen. when he goes to India, whether he goes to Palestine, wherever he shows his face, he is representing the Queen herself, and in some level he carries some of the honor of the Queen. Replica sort of reminds you, representative is a higher level. But then there's a whole nother level. There's something called a representation. A representation means it really carries a lot more of the honor, the covered, the actual item itself. So for instance, the flag of a nation. I remember many years ago, I was a student in karate and there was a Japanese flag in the dojo. An old-time Marine walked into the dojo and he was aghast. And he looked at us and said, "How could you put that flag on the wall? Don't you know what we went through to fight those Japs?" You see, the flag is a representation of the government. When they say a man will die for his colors, a man will die for the flag, it's because that flag is a representation of the seat of government itself. There are certain laws how to fold a flag. A U.S. flag is not allowed to touch the ground. Why? Because it's a representation of the monarchy itself. If you have a statue of the king and you spit on a statue, it's not spitting on a piece of marble. That piece of marble is a representation of the king himself. It carries some of the honor, some of the clout of the king himself. And I believe that's Pshat and Hillel. You see, this body, this physical guf, is a representation of God in this world. When Hashem created man, Hashem created an entire cosmos. The stars, the sun, the moon, and everything within it for man. Everything that exists is for man because man has such unimaginable importance, such prestige. But even more than that, Nevi Shechaim explains to us that everything in creation is based on man. Because everything was created for man, everything is dependent on man. If man uses the world properly, every item in creation keeps its energy, keeps its strength, keeps its reason for existence. And if a part of creation is used inappropriately, it loses its reason for creation. If you'd like to understand man's relationship to the world, in a sense, he's a little creator. He's a little Bore in the sense that everything was created for him and everything is dependent upon him. Hashem brought it forth for him. Hashem made it for him. If he uses it properly, it retains its reason for existence. In a sense, it's dependent upon him. But you see, it's the physical body. It's when I eat that chicken. It's when I sit on that chair. I'm now a representation of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. I'm a Borei in this physical world. Everything that was brought forth for me. Everything was created for me. And when I use it right, it itself is fulfilling its purpose. It now has a reason to exist. And if I didn't do that, it would not have a reason to exist. In that sense, man is a Borei, a little creator. If you'd like to understand what Hillel was saying, Hillel had a very clear understanding of his importance. When Hashem created Adam, Hashem put him into this world and said, "You are the reason for creation." And when Hillel was going to the bathhouse, he was treating the smallest object of him, his physical corporeal existence, with such honor because that is a representation of God in this world. Not merely a replica, not merely a representative, actually a representation of God himself. And if we human beings ever understood the importance of another person, we'd be astonished, we'd be amazed. If I could train my mind's eye to see a human being as HaKadosh Baruch Hu sees that human being, if I could train my mind's eye to see a person as the Torah does, I would see a person, oh my goodness, Tzelem Elokim, the image of God, a representation of Hashem himself, the honor and respect due to another human being simply because he was created in the image of Hashem is beyond belief and beyond our ability to understand. And I'd like to share with you quite how significant this point is. Next time you go to a Shiva house, I want you to think the following thought. This event was not supposed to happen. Imagine you go to a Shiva house and it's a very rough one. A young woman with 7 orphans. 7 little kinderlach left alone in the world. And I want you to walk into that room and say to yourself, this was not supposed to be. Hashem didn't want this to be. According to the plan, it wasn't in the script. Why? Because when Hashem created man, death was not part of the program. Death didn't exist. When Hashem created man, Hashem put Adam in Gan Eden and said, in this state you will live forever. You're given the opportunity to grow. You're given the opportunity to change yourself. And whatever you make yourself, you are forever. Death wasn't part of the picture. When Adam sinned, what he did was he ruined creation. He destroyed creation. The Mesil Sharm explains to us that Hashem took Adam around to all the beautiful trees. Look at all of the Ilanos. Look how beautiful this world I've made is. Everything I've created for you. Pay attention that you don't destroy my world. Because Adam and that moment was not just the little creator. Everything in creation was dependent upon him. And when he messed up, he destroyed the world. Hashem gave him the keys to creation and Adam trashed it. And if you'd like to understand why death came into the world, if you understand why work came into the world, if you'd like to understand why all the suffering that we go through exists, it's because Hashem Kaviyachol said, I can no longer run the world as I wanted to. You've ruined it. And the Ma'amar Ikrim, Ramchal, explains to us that death was not a punishment. It wasn't like, oh, you're a bad guy, you ate from the Eitz Hadas, I'm going to punish you. Explains Ramchal, the author of the Mesil Sharm, that when Adam sinned, he destroyed the world. Hashem said, the world that I made, it can no longer exist as it did before. The only way I can do it now is there has to be an institution called death. Then there's going to be another stage of where you're going to be in Olam Emes. There'll be a slight stage afterwards. Then there'll be Tchias Mesim. And there has to be now three stages. Because the way it was originally was to be one stage. You're in Gan Eden. You grow, accomplish. Now there has to be death. Now there has to be a world of Olamos where you stay in a certain place with the Neshama for a while. And then there's Tchias Mesim. But now there has to be three stages because Adam, you destroyed the world that I created. And if you'd like to see the power given to one man, the extraordinary power given to one individual, just look at this fact. We now, some almost 6,000 years later, live a vastly different life than the way Hashem planned it to be. Suffering, pain, the exile wasn't part of the program. Depression, alcoholism, all of the various troubles and sorrows and worries that the human race goes through only happened because one man sinned. But it's not a punishment. It's that Hashem created the entire world for that man. Hashem gave him the keys to creation. And Hashem said, go forth. If you accomplish, if you grow, the world will have its fulfillment. It'll have its reason for existence. It'll flourish. It'll shine. But if not, it will be destroyed. Pay careful attention that you don't destroy my world. Adam HaRishon messed up. And we now, the ones who come after, are enjoying the fruits of that. Did Hashem know what happened? Certainly, yes. Did Hashem have that in forethought beforehand? Yes. But the bottom line is, that is the power that was given to man, one sin. And it's an astonishing power, an astonishing effectiveness. But there's one more step we have to take. And that's that you and I have to remember a Mishnah in Sanhedrin. It's a Mishnah in Sanhedrin that the world doesn't know. It's a Mishnah in Sanhedrin that we, in our operating mode of life, do not know either. The Mishnah in Sanhedrin says, Chayev Adam Lomer, a man is obligated to say, Bishvili Nivra Olam, Hashem created the world for me. And the Mishnah explains, by all rights, the world should have been created differently than it was. Hashem should have created the entire Jewish nation, 600,000 men, at the base of Har Sinai. Hashem should have started the first moment of creation with Anochi Hashem Elokecha. That should have been the first moment of time. The entire nation gathered at the mount, Hashem himself speaking, giving the directives, sending mankind on its mission, on its plan. But that's not the way Hashem created the world. Hashem created the world with one man, one woman, and from that couple came the next generation, the next generation, the next generation. Explains the mission of the reason for this. Hashem created one man alone to teach every one of us the following lesson. That everything in creation was worthy to create for that man alone. You see, the rivers, the mountains, the oceans, all that my eye sees when it looks out on a vast and wide world was created for one single man. And the reason Hashem did that was because he couldn't tell us that in the Mishnah. He couldn't write it in a pasuk in Chumash. We had to see it, we had to feel it, that it's worthy to create the entire cosmos, billions and billions of galaxies, all for one man, because that is the importance of one man. And the Mishnah says, Chayiv Adam Lomer, a man is obligated to say that I too am a man. And it means that it was worthy for Hashem to have created the entire universe, everything for me and me alone. And now we come to the key crux question. What in the world could I ever do that would make it worthy for Hashem to create an entire world for me? You know, we live in a world where people like to have things named after them. For me, it's a street. Another guy, maybe it's an entire neighborhood. Oh, I want the RFK Bridge named after me. You know, if you make it really big in this world, you get a country. You can name a country Alexandria, a city named after you. But what in the world would make you important enough to name the planet after you? What in the world will make you important enough to name the cosmos after you? And my friends, this question is pivotal. Understanding that it's not because of anything that you've done, and not because of any merit that you have, but Hashem put you in the center of creation, gave you power, gave you significance, and gave you the opportunity to change worlds, to accomplish phenomenal things. We live in a very physical world. We live in a very dense world. We don't see the impact. We don't understand the gravity. But Hashem says it was worthy to create an entire world for you and you alone, because that is the opportunity that I'm giving you as an Adam. I'm giving you the opportunity to shape worlds. While you're in this physical world, you won't see it. While you're in this very dense, thick world, you won't understand it. But once you leave, you'll understand the gravity of your actions, the impact of your words. You'll live in a very different dimension, and from that dimension, you'll look back on this world and you'll see, oh my goodness, those little things that I did, I thought they were so insignificant. I thought they didn't matter. I did put on tefillin in the right order. I didn't. I did have the right kavanah. I didn't. What difference did it make? And now I see they're huge. They're impactful beyond anything imaginable. In the physical dimension, it's difficult to understand. And every once in a while, you read about a chazal, and you begin to understand that we're not really dealing with the full picture. But my friends, if you find me the most egotistical person in the world, find me the Donald Trumps, find me the real, absolute, total, bombastic buffoons who believe that God created the world for them, I'd like to share with you that they sell themselves short. The most egotistical person you'll ever find cannot imagine his real significance and his real importance. What Chazal are saying to us is, this is it. Hashem would have created the whole world for you and you alone. When Ingrid Newkirk says that if it's a baby or a snake, I'm not sure which, it's not that she values animal life. It's that she doesn't have a clue to the importance of a human being. Yes, animals are very important. Hashem created everything with a significant reason. And they got that part of the equation correct. Animals are very important, and a human being should not cause any pain unnecessarily to an animal. But no one understands that there's no basis of comparison between an animal and a man. Human being is so huge, so unimaginably important. The reason for creation itself. And more than that, when man uses the world properly, the world itself has a reason for creation. The world itself has a reason to be. And if man doesn't use the world that way, the world itself doesn't have a reason to be. Adam is the reason. Adam is the center. What Hillel was doing was washing the representation of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, because he understood the power that Hashem gave to man. And I'd like to mention one last mushel, because understanding the balance between real, real greatness of the human being and humility is one of the great mysteries that requires an awful lot of understanding. And I'd like to share with you a mushel that I think well defines it. Imagine the following. Imagine you're passing a construction site, and in the center of the construction site, you see a huge crane. Huge crane picking up piles and piles of dirt, stones, rocks, all day long. It's moving back and forth, tons and tons of debris. You notice that the operator of the crane has got himself a pretty big paunch over there, and he's constantly smoking. And you see one of his co-workers walk over to him and say to him, Joe, look at you. 80 pounds overweight, chain smoking 2 packs a day. Joe, what's wrong with you? Get to a gym and work out. Joe, you got to take care of your health. You got to show up at a health club right away. Get to the gym, work out. Which point Joe looks to his buddy and says, me, work out, go to the gym? What do you think I do all day? Lift heavy loads, thousands of pounds, big stones. I'm lifting all day. I don't got to go to gym to work out. I do that all day. Joe, that's not you. That's the crane. You're the little guy inside pulling the levers. My friends, that's a powerful muscle. You see, when I walk in the room, you know who walked in the room? An Adam. Not a replica, not a representative, a representation of HaKadosh Baruch Hu himself, and the honor due to this crane, the honor due to this man is astonishing. My words are powerful. My actions are impactful. The value of everything I do is unimaginable. So I'm a Baal Gaiva, right? I'm a big shot. I'm important, right? Well, not exactly. Because you see, I didn't make the brain. I didn't shape the skin or the face. I'm but that little guy inside. I'm the eye inside who moves the levers, and wow, arms and legs and mouth moves. It's amazing what the crane could accomplish. It's a huge and powerful crane operated by a little guy inside. So am I great or am I small? The answer is I'm both. I'm that little tiny guy inside who operates a huge crane. When Hashem created me and put me in the world, He said, "You are an Adam." A man has the ability to change things. A man has the ability to change the very world he lives in. A man is so significant and so important. So I'm a Baal Gaiva? Absolutely not. You're a Nivra, you're a creation. But understanding that balance, understanding that I am created in the image of Hashem, understanding that my words, my actions are so impactful and so powerful, and yet I remain that little guy inside, is a very delicate balance. But that balance allows us to understand life in a very significant, real way.